Another day, another task, think fast with a whole nother mission complete.
Successful-ish.
Pick up the weight, press on, and act on the visions I see.
I'm successful-ish.
Sit back and bask in the glory of all the goals I achieve.
Successful-ish.
Lose a stack, get it back, reinvest, hope with, then I roll up my sleeve.
Hello, friends. Welcome to Successful-ish. I'm Sarah Michelle. And today on the podcast, we are talking about two of my favorite things, creativity and strategy. I have straddled the fence between these two worlds since the start of my career, and honestly, probably even before that. And if you're like me, you may have grown up with a lot of messaging that you were either right-brained or left-brained, which has been largely debunked in recent years. And if you're really like me and got your degree in advertising, you may have had the same upsetting talk that I had with my college advisors, that you could either be a super strategic account manager or a whimsically creative director. And while there may be many, and you may yourself be included in this, who skew heavily towards one side of this or another, I think that most of us are somewhere in the middle. And even the most creative and strategic strategists have both left and right brain functions. The challenge, I think, is that while we do have access to both sides, we still view them as sides, like we have to pick one. And this belief that we have to choose can get in the way of finding that healthy collaborative medium, which we need for pretty much anything and everything that we do in life. So our guest today head up the strategic and the creative departments at GigaSavvy, the rad agency that I am fortunate to work with, and they are masters at creatively strategic problem solving. A little about our fabulous guest today, Aaron Naderman. Over the past 20-ish years, Aaron has worked in marketing, branding, and PR for a broad spectrum of industries. And after working on the corporate side of the onset of her career, she found her fit in client services with agencies specializing in both the traditional and digital marketing. Over the past few years, she has been able to use her vast experience to more narrowly focus on strategy, growth, and overall operations. She is born and raised in Texas and is a Southern California transplant as of 7 years ago. She enjoys spending as much time with her husband and daughter outdoors, taking advantage of the great weather, biking, hiking, skating, beaching, all of the fun things. And Mitch Fate, her fabulous counterpart, is the creative director and partner at GigaSavvy, the Southern California independent brand, content, and creative agency, where he shapes campaigns for all clients, including Hi-Chew, Nationwide, Toshiba, and West Coast University. Mitch believes that brand campaigns need to dive below surface attributes and tap into the human condition to build long-lasting brand loyalty, more so in a fast-moving, digitally-driven media environment. He leads a talented team of creatives who embrace exploring strategic truths to inspire unforgettable stories that build brands. He joined GigaSavvy a decade ago after founding the creative shop Trick Pony and working as the head of production at Coldcast TV. He's a graduate of Chapman University with a degree in advertising and film production and directed his first TV commercial while still in high school at the ripe old age of 16. I have the pleasure of working with both Aaron and Mitch every day, very closely, very collaboratively, and seeing how their brains work very differently and yet very similarly. They really are experts at blending creative and strategic thinking. And I know that is something that many struggle with, even outside of the advertising industry. I think anyone in any capacity of business life, we get kind of in this trap of thinking we have to be left brain, right brain, or how to merge the two. And so I'm really excited to have them share some of their expertise today. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So before we jump into the conversation, I would love to know, what is something you failed at this week?
Well, I will start. One of my New Year's goals coming into this new year was to try to get up out of my chair and away from my computer throughout the day a little bit more and maybe take a walk or two every day. I have failed miserably at that this week. My schedule of back-to-back meetings has not allowed me to do that. So I've got to be a little bit more disciplined in figuring out how to manage my schedule to make that happen. So off to a not great start, but I plan to get back on track.
Yep. That is the good thing, bad thing about working remote. Like, it's this fantasy. You think like, oh, I work from home. I have all this time to do whatever. But, you know, you work from home. So your work is on your phone, on your computer. Like, it follows you.
Right.
What about you, Mitch?
I would say sleep. I'm going to start with sleep. I failed at sleep. We have a newborn about 6-7 weeks old now. And we're in the midst of colic and colds and just all the things, but there's a trickle down effect of lack of sleep, lack of cognitive ability. And there has been, you know, smaller decisions that feel like bigger decisions that failed miserably because of the lack of sleep. So I'll start with that.
That's a tough one, but that also means that we're probably going to have really authentic Mitch commentary on this podcast, because lack of sleep speaking is almost as good as drunk speaking. So we are going to hear straight from the heart of what you believe about creativity and strategy.
Well, Aaron, I'll tell you, the drunk speaking and regular Mitch speaking are pretty one and the same. Transparency is not a hardship for me.
So I actually had someone one time, they were teasing me because I am such a square and I don't partake in recreational activities, shall we say. And when they became legal, largely all over New England, everybody was partaking and kind of making fun of me. And I remember having this conversation, and I don't remember what I asked, but I asked some kind of like deep, what's the meaning of the universe question. And this whole group of people just looked over me like, God, Sarah, you don't even need drugs. Like, you're just naturally there. You just talk like you're high all the time. So I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
I think I say good. I'm going to go with good.
Yeah. I think so. All the candid thoughts. So yes. I would love to know a little bit just from each of you, your story. I know we shared a lot in the bios, but sort of share a little bit about your perspective of how you got where you are today, how you got in the creative and strategic world, and then maybe a little bit about how you got to where you're at with your working relationship at GigaSavvy. And Aaron, I'll start with you. I'll let you lead off.
Okay. Well, I started my career in really a dual role. So I was doing PR and marketing both. So I wore, like many of us, when we come out of college, you're having to, you know, wear multiple hats, which was good for me. I got to learn a lot of different skills and trades immediately right out of school. And I was I had a can-do attitude. So it worked for me because I was a go-getter and I was ambitious and I was ready to take on the world and do everything. And in my first job, I kind of did everything from, you know, building web pages and managing a website and seeing the need for, at the time, message boards were a big thing. And I thought, I'm going to launch myself a message board and I'm going to manage that to help drive sales. And anyway, so definitely started out under the PR marketing umbrella doing a whole lot of different things. Loved that job, loved the diversity, really, really loved it. It was for a small company. From there, as I grew my career, I stayed in PR for a bit, a short while, but the further I went down my career path, the more the marketing opportunities became very apparent. So I started going down more of the marketing and branding route. So I was a brand manager for multiple brands for several years, Radio Shack Corporate back in the day, worked for them on their branding team, developing their private brand labels. So did that for quite some time on the corporate side until eventually there was an opportunity with an agency and I found my fit in client services and account management. So with that role, I think that's really where I learned the importance of strategy and creative and bringing the two together. As an account manager at these small agencies, we are expected to definitely be the strategist on the account. We didn't have a dedicated strategy team, so we were expected to play the role of a strategist and understand the business and work with the clients and the businesses on their business goals. So I think that's where I first started getting my taste of kind of what we're talking about today and really how you marry that strategy with the creative to create really strong, compelling campaigns. So I've been in on the agency side for several years, and more recently, about a year and a half ago, really found my strong suit on the operational, financial, and growth side of agency. So I've kind of shifted my focus into that area as of late.
Awesome. And Mitch, how about you? How'd you get where you are today?
Well, I need you to stop me if I start talking too much or go back way too far, but
we'll give you the symbol, the land,
yes,
the plane.
Please.
Bring it
please,
in.
Please. Yeah. I actually started thinking that I was going to go into architecture. Growing up, I was very, very math driven, problem solving, loved calculus, loved algebra, loved art. But then I found film and doing, you know, new shows. So right after high school, found my love and went to film school at Chapman University, where I actually studied with the Duffer brothers from Stranger Things. So one of a fun little caveat or story is that, you know, I was art director on their first film called Eater, worked with them closely. And then out of college, I didn't necessarily want to go the traditional kind of film route. I think one thing I can kind of put my flag in the sand on is I don't necessarily do things the traditional way. I like to question everything and really do things a bit different or do things that make sense to me and the way I see the world. I've always gravitated towards more short form storytelling. So right out of college, joined Coldcast TV, which was like a web television network. They were well ahead of their time creating original content on the internet long before, you know, we had CTV and all the different apps on Roku or whatnot. And I gained a ton of insight and knowledge on, you know, where I think the industry is going and just connecting with audiences on an emotional level through branded content. And then from there, I started my own production company with a high school buddy of mine. We just kind of wanted to do our own thing and thought, let's do it together. What could go wrong there, you know? And we started out creating, you know, it was kind of a glorified videography company, if I'm being honest. We had no money, no startup costs. So, you know, the first project we did a talking head video for the LLC. Or for the law firm that did our LLC, and then decided we never wanted to do wedding videos. The end goal was to do, you know, commercial work, at least in my brain. So we kind of chipped away at that. We actually got thrown into wedding videos, surprising enough, because we got hired by Bravo to do the Vanderpumps, not Lisa Vanderpump, Pandora's wedding. And so even though we swore off, we're never going to do weddings because that's not what we want to do. We want to do more commercial work. We ended up getting thrown into that world. And from there, we started making relationships with all the agencies by doing great content creation and met GigaSavvy. And from there, film director at GigaSavvy came on full time, became a partner, big part of the direction of where we were going. Started as a small social website shop. And I think through a lot of different things, my skill set kind of lended itself to where the agency wanted to go. Great creative storytelling was like at the forefront of what we needed to do to create bigger relationships with our brands. So we weren't in this like Chinese menu of tactical. And so the storytelling aspect of what I brought to the table started to rise to the top. So the transition from film director to creative director was actually pretty seamless, even though that's not a typical route of a creative director. You know, with a normal shop, you've got either come from copy or you come from art. And my background is a little bit of both, if that makes sense. And more grounded in this content creation and connecting with their audience in a larger way, which I used to shy away from. And now I really lean into because content is everything. So seems to be doing us pretty well because of my background.
It's always crazy to me, just the roundabout ways that we get to where we are in our career. And I know, I think for most people, I think, you know, you go to, like, at least when I went to school, I was sort of told you have to choose. You can be an account manager, you can be a creative. And I really didn't want to be an account manager, but I failed graphic design. And so they were like, well, no creative for you, Sarah, like, sorry. And those were really the only two options. And I feel like when I went on my own and was working with clients, I had it in my head of like, okay, well, I have to be really good at one or the other. I have to be really good at one or the other. And it was the random stuff. It was like a $12 an hour sales job that really benefited me. It was a peer counseling course that really benefited me. It was growing up with a, shall we say, family that struggled with productive communication style that really benefited me. So I think that it's really interesting. And I know when I first started, it was the agency I started at, I was very like, the account managers do all the thinking, and then we tell the creatives what they need to know and then kind of dismiss them off to the kiddie table to make it look pretty. And so I feel like that's changed. And I'm curious, for both of you coming from different backgrounds, like, how have you seen creative work, strategic work, how have you seen those silos change or evolve in the course of your career?
I mean, I would say the very first agency that I worked at was probably the most apparent, where I saw that creative strategy struggle that you're referencing between creative and account. It was extremely painful. And before coming onto the agency side, it was something I had never experienced before inside of an organization like that. So it was a little bit confusing to me, because you're thinking, aren't we on the same team? Aren't we trying to accomplish the same objective for the client? Why am I looked at as your enemy here? But the good news is that did not last long. It became apparent that that was not sustainable or something that agency wanted to embrace, that type of culture. So that evolved very quickly into changes that created that cohesiveness and that collaboration between strategy and creative. So I know that that is something that is talked about quite a bit with agencies, and that stigma definitely, whether it's current or past, exists. I've been lucky enough in, outside of that one agency that I worked with in the beginning, I've been fortunate enough that every agency I've been a part of, they have adopted a better way of working. And so that's been my experience.
And I'm curious too, I think, Erin, you mentioned coming from corporate background as well. My experience of switching from agency to corporate was the agency was very siloed. Everyone had their job, their hat. It was like a point of pride. But when you switch over to the corporate side or the client side, it's just marketing. Doesn't matter what you do. It doesn't matter if you're the designer, the video person, the strategic person. Like, if you're the person who is coming up with anything marketing, you're just marketing. What was that your experience, or did you experience, I don't know, different?
My personal experience was a bit different. Yes, I think everybody tends to fit a lot of different things under marketing and look at it at a bigger picture. I think on the brand side, the rub was always between product marketers or sales and marketing. That was where the rub was, versus strategy and creative, more of like what I would consider in on the agency side. But it is very interesting, that perspective you bring up, because when I did work at Radio Shack initially, when I was hired for that position, I was brought on as a contractor to work within the in-house agency. So they hired an outside agency for a dedicated team that sat within the corporation and acted as an extension of the team. But to your point, we were still seen as the agency or the outsider, despite being 9 to 5 every day in that building, sitting next to brand and marketing and sales. So that was an interesting dynamic, because I went from being on the agency side within that corporation to I finished that contract project. And then they brought me on full time into the brand. So then I was on the branding team within Radio Shack. And that transition was very interesting because what you're talking about definitely felt that shift from agency and their perspective on marketing to the branding side and the view of marketing.
Yeah, absolutely. Mitch, I'm curious in your experience, because you've been the more traditional creative and creative hat, what has it been like for you approaching those strategic conversations or being invited to those C-suite top level discussions? Has that changed? Are you kind of dismissed as creative? Are you invited in? What has that looked like for you?
I would say I come from a different background, like being with Geeky Savvy for almost a decade now. When we first started out, we were, again, social website. So we didn't have any strategy, no strategy team. We didn't have a strategy department. And I think early on, it was just kind of, we didn't even have creative briefs. It was kind of mind blowing how we would just kind of, with previous, you know, people in charge and things like that, things were just kind of thrown out and we'll just do it this way. There was no real strategy leading up to it. I would say when I kind of came into my role, there was this thought, I think there was this stigma of I'm a creative. And so all my ideas weren't backed by strategy. And I think the frustrating thing that I had was I was able to put points together and connect dots that others couldn't necessarily see and come up with a creative solution and then present the creative solution. But I think all what was missing was how my brain got there. And I think that was the biggest struggle for me, was people thinking, oh, he's just the crazy, wacky creative throwing out a big idea that isn't backed by strategy. And the frustration of me being like, no, like this couldn't be more strategic. And so I think the way we've evolved is being able to put processes in place and bring on people that are able to understand the ADHD nature of my brain and like simplify what the strategy was to come up with some of these big ideas. And also, you know, the processes in place to bring that to life to clients, internal team, so that everyone can see all the steps that went into going and coming up with this creative solution. So it's a little bit of a different answer. I don't think we ever had necessarily those silos. It was more of the stigma of your idea is cool, but it's just fancy art. Whereas the frustration of no, you have no idea all the strategy that went behind this and the struggle of me coming to terms with I'm not communicating it well enough. Who can I partner with to actually bring those things to life so that it's easier to understand all the steps, how we got there?
Yeah, I think one thing that we've talked a lot about as an agency is this aspect of problem solving. And ultimately, that's what businesses are wanting to do. They're wanting to solve a problem, whether that's we need people to know about us, we need people to like us, we need people to buy our stuff, whatever that problem is. And I think we've all experienced the difference between a mindset of, well, I just need an ad campaign because I feel like I need an ad campaign versus I need to solve a problem and I'm open to whatever creative solution will solve this problem. So when you are speaking with different clients, different industries, one of the big questions that comes up is which comes first, creative or strategy? Do you lead with the big idea and then build out a strategy to implement it? Do you start with a strategy and then come up with a creative idea that helps the strategy? So maybe you can answer that not so simple question for us. Which comes first?
Well, I'll answer it simply and quickly with both. What I mean by that is it's definitely on a case-by-case basis. I mean, there's nothing more that I like. And again, I'm biased being on the creative side. Starting with the big idea that's going to solve a big, you know, business problem. Starting there and then finding out all the strategies and tactical elements to get us to that But there's a lot of times where that doesn't make sense. Client has a very strict budget. They know they're going to be doing a media plan in this market. They need to reach this audience. So starting with the insights and the strategy of in the media plan, starting there, sometimes the smaller sandbox allows us to make bigger, better creative ideas. Because, I mean, as a creative, when the sandbox is too big, you can go all over the place and you don't have a firm direction. So I think one thing that we have on our side is all of our creative team thinks strategy first. So it's not just pretty pictures. But to concisely answer, both. It just depends on the project and what the constraints are. I don't know if you have anything to add there, Ann.
Well, I think that when you talk about which one comes first, what Mitch is talking about is how something is brought to life. We can be flexible about how that happens, because if there happens to be a big idea and we want to support it with strategy in that particular case, that's fine. But when we are presenting, we always lead with strategy, because the reality is every client wants to, and this is a bit, this, I think this is a big struggle right now as well, is just everybody uses the term strategy so loosely and defines it a bit differently, but they all want to see it, right? And so it's valuable. Clients want to know that it's a part of what you're delivering for them, but they want to see it, right? And so part of the presentation is what Mitch was talking about earlier that was lacking, is how do we show, how do we give insight into all of the minutiae and the details that go into creating the strategy that got to the concept, right? And so leading with strategy and showing them a little bit behind the curtain of our thinking and the strategy that gets you to the concept is what our agency over time has had to hone and a strength that we've had to build. And I do think that regardless of whether it's the creative or big idea that comes first supported by the strategy, we always present strategy first, because that's what makes sense. And that's what explains the rationale behind what we're presenting. And so that's what we've tried to perfect over time.
Which I think people need. I think they need that this is why it works. This is the train of thought. Because something that is really challenging is that in both strategy and creative, it's largely subjective. Mm-hmm. And no matter how we might try, we all have an ego. We all have a vision for how we want to see something come through. And it might not even be a selfish ego of I have to win. It might just be I'm really passionate about this and I know that this is a good idea. So to balance that with thinking through, you both have different perspectives. Everyone in the agency has their own view. The client has their own view. There's probably multiple people among the client that have views. You got to think about the customers. So how do you approach that? How do you approach having so many different perspectives and being able to streamline that back into one very clear creative strategy that makes sense to everyone?
What I find that works the best is empathy, meaning being able to put yourself in everyone else's shoes, know where they're coming from, know, and not just write it off. I think the biggest disappointment can be, oh, they're coming from the brand. They don't know any, like, they don't know. They're not the big agency. They don't know what they're talking about, and just write it off. We'll go behind the curtain. Or, you know, that's not their department. So they don't, we might listen to them. I think empathy, hearing everyone out, and finding the common thread. I think finding the common thread without watering down the big idea or the strategy that is the through line. You need to pivot and quickly change if new information comes to life, and be able to make that decision quickly. I think the biggest thing is people want a leader. People want someone to be making the decisions and pushing it forward, but also be heard. They want to be heard. They want to feel like their input matters. So I think that's probably the biggest compliment we've ever gotten as an agency is clients, and internally, the thought that all ideas are good ideas, even if they're bad ideas, because some of the worst ideas lead to good ideas. And it's just, it's more information, it's more viewpoints, it's more inputs, data that lead us to hopefully the best idea.
Absolutely. And I do think that that's something that what we do really well as a team at GigaSavvy is that it doesn't matter if it's the top leadership level or a junior new hire, all ideas are welcome and valid. And there is a lot of respect behind every perspective, because I think that regardless of where someone is in their career, the human experience is different and unique for everyone. And everyone is going to be able to lend that, which kind of fuels that empathy. And so I'm curious if you can share a little more about how the two of you found your working relationship of being able to balance the two. I know we talked about, you know, traditional agencies, there might've been some butting heads between creative and strategy. Was it smooth sailing from the first moment you two shook hands, or was there some ups and downs? Were there some learning challenges? Paint us a picture of how your working relationship has become what it is today.
So from my perspective, I can't think of a time when we, Mitch and I, have ever butted heads on strategy and creative. I mean, the good thing, I think the reason we have such a good working relationship is because we're transparent and honest with one another. So if there is something like a concern, we'll talk it out immediately. We won't let it lie. But I will say, I can't think of a time when we've had a challenge specifically regarding strategy and creative. We sometimes have different viewpoints on different things, and we challenge each other in a really good, healthy way. And we usually come to a good either compromise, or his point of view will win me over, or vice versa. And that only creates a better outcome for whatever it is we're working on or discussing. But for the most part, I think Mitch is just a really easygoing person to work with, which I have to say is very rare with creatives. Not because creatives are terrible people, it's creatives, they think a little bit differently. They can get a little bit defensive sometimes about their creative. And I've been fortunate enough to work with two creative directors in my career that I would say are extremely good at hearing others' points of view, hearing, being challenged in a healthy way. And Mitch is one of the two that I'm referring to. He's just really got a healthy perspective on how to work with other people, how to take feedback, how to collaborate in a way that is a mentality of this is what's best for the business or the client versus this is my art and I take this personally. So that's my perspective, but I'll turn it over to Mitch because he might feel completely differently.
And Mitch is over there like, oh shoot, I was going to say that we hated each other. Now I got to think of a new answer.
No, I think I couldn't thank you enough, Aaron, for the kind words. I think the empathy and the team collaboration, I think, comes from the film background. To be honest, I think it's a very different film. Is one of the most expensive art forms that there is, and there is zero way to do it all on your own. Even if you're the rogue documentary guy and you're doing everything on your 16mm camera, there's still collaboration. And I just have this viewpoint of someone's got to lead. Someone's got to have a vision and lead the team. But the more inputs and the more people that you can bring to the table that bring their expertise, it creates what I call the mushroom cloud of creativity versus if you're a dictator with my way or the highway. Like, no matter how fucking brilliant you are as an artist, you're going to hit a glass ceiling because it's only one perspective. Especially in advertising, when you need to be able to connect with different audiences, different motivations, different, points of view, collaboration is like, and empathy, I think, is paramount. And then going back to Aaron and I's relationship, I couldn't agree more. It's been, I think if any struggles that we've had, it's been, I'm the crazy, frantic, dreamer, and Aaron is very like process and like perfection. Like, we got to do this right. And I think where we might have had struggles in the past, again, nothing big, they've only become huge strengths now. I think the biggest thing you can do as just in general in life is know your strengths, know your weaknesses, find people that balance those weaknesses out, and then that hopefully have counter weaknesses. I don't know if that makes sense.
Complimentary. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. So her constantly asking questions and like only drives me to make question, you know, our strategy, our point of view on things. It's either going to make it better, or we're going to, and I'll refine like why this is the best way, or pivot, because actually that's a great fucking idea. We should pivot. And, you know, just being able to be flexible with that, with new inputs. I love our working relationship because of the, what did you say, Aaron?
Our complementary styles or skills, yes. Our yin and our, yes, yang.
Yes.
So I want to unpack that a little bit, because I think that that's something that is really easy to say. I think most people would say, yes, collaboration, different perspective. But a lot of times that is very challenging to figure out, okay, how do I actually do this? And especially with strong personalities like creatives or strategists. And I've worked with on either end where the creative is like, but this is my masterpiece. And I've also worked with like the super strategic MBA. It's like, but the data. And you're like, but intuition, but human connection. And so I think that it makes sense that you want to collaborate. You want to bring in different perspectives. But when it comes down to it and you think that you have a good idea, now all of a sudden you've got this idea blocker coming at you because they have a creative idea or they have data that needs to go a certain way. That can be very uncomfortable. And I think that the initial human reaction is to kind of get that knot in the stomach, where even if you're polite, your inner brain is like, all right, this is how we're going to play this. All right, making a note in my little book. So talk us through a little bit, as best as you can, if you can break down, how do you have those empathetic conversations? And especially when you are bringing in, you've got clients, you've got designers, you've got account managers. There are times where there are like 20 people on a call to kick off a creative brief. That's a lot of perspective, a lot of opinion. How do you do that?
I'll start by saying, I think each person has to own part of that themselves by going into every situation open-minded. Because if you go into a situation with a bad attitude and a closed mind, and this is what I firmly believe, and I don't care what this person says, or I'm not open to that, you're going to get the outcome. That's the outcome you're going to get. You're going to get the outcome of the attitude you have. It's not going to be a pleasant conversation. You're going to butt heads with people. It's not going to be pleasant. But going into that situation, going, I need to listen, be open to listening to others, to understanding other viewpoints. What can I learn from this that I don't already know? And leverage the talent and skills that other people have that they have expertise in that I don't. I mean, something that Mitch said earlier that I think is really great, and that is identifying, accepting, and being honest about your own strengths and weaknesses is important, because we all have strengths and we all have weaknesses, and there are other people that can help fill holes or balance us out in certain areas. And so the sooner you can kind of accept that and embrace it and come to a situation open-minded. I do think attitude and mental state when you go into any situation is the first step in being successful in that. But Mitch, I'd love to hear your perspective.
Agree with everything you just said. I would say we've built a culture to where we're very not siloed. Like we expect everyone on the team to have, on the creative side, to have a strategy. Like we have no creatives that are just, I want to make creative, fun, you know, artsy stuff, pretty art. And I don't think we have any strategists that just want to just live in the day. Like, everyone wants to see great creative happen. They want to see great results for our clients. And I think to some degree, I'll just bring in account to this, which is can be typically seen as like the client says this and like they're the client's advocate. And sometimes that can go too far in other agencies. I think one of the biggest moments I've had is being on set with an account manager. And she's like, Mitch, you know what? I fully understand why you push back so much on certain things. And it's that understanding and creating a culture where everyone is a team player and has a vested interest in creating great work. And it's not just, it has to be this crazy artistic way, because we so care about the client outcome and we so care about all the strategy that makes this creative work actually work and not just be something cool. And so I think it's in the hiring process. I think our HR team and Samantha that came on is such a great integral part of developing this amazing culture and the questions we ask and finding the right people. And we take up, I apologize if I'm not supposed to cuss, but a fuck ton of time hiring the right person and making sure that they are the right person.
And vouch for that. 5 dozen interviews. I talked to every single person in the agency. And at one point I had people asking haven't you been interviewing with them for like 3 months? Are you sure that they're not just like talking to you to be nice and they don't know how to break up with you? It's been like 3 months.
Yeah. No, it's a big part.
But I do think that setting a standard and building a culture around it and also living it out and demonstrating it at the highest level. If Mitch and I didn't demonstrate, our working relationship the way that we would, and we weren't living that out, we couldn't expect the rest of our team to do that. So we have to model for the team what we expect the culture to be and how people should be collaborating and working together. And we have a lot of conversation about that, right? Is even people in our organization that want to move up into a leadership position or director role or whatever, it's like, hey, this is a big responsibility because it's not just about your day-to-day. It's about what you model for the rest of the team. We take that seriously. And so, you got to set the tone, you got to model it, and you got to set expectations, and you got to hire people that have the same value, the same type of collaboration that we do.
That's actually a great point, Aaron.
Go ahead.
Just to double down on that, I just think, especially in client presentations or things like that, if you don't agree with your counterpart, don't fucking show it. Like, you are the same team. And that goes for the leadership team to the rest of the team. You offline that. If anyone is, not on the same page, you don't air your dirty laundry in front of the rest of the team, because we need to be a united front. And to Aaron's point earlier, you got to demonstrate how the collaboration works, the respect. I think respect even beyond empathy. So empathy is like, it's respect, then empathy, trying to put yourself in their shoes, understand where they're coming from. But if you don't have that respect, the empathy is not going to matter. It's going to be like, I don't even care what the other person thinks, because they haven't earned my respect.
So you sort of alluded to this, but I want to expand a little on what do you do if you run across someone who does not have that mindset? They aren't in this culture. So this could be not necessarily, I know if there's a little more control with who you're hiring, but you don't always know what you're going to get with a client, or let's say a client brings in a new partner, or let's say it's not even work related. You're just out having a conversation at a networking group or hanging out with friends or whatever that might be. What are some ways to respond in those dynamics that would help invite that person into a healthier collaborative perspective?
Well, Mitch, do you want to take this one or you want me to kick it off?
Either or.
So what we're finding is that more and more clients want to be part of that collaborative process, right? They don't want to hire an agency to go behind the curtain, create some big fun ideas, come out, pitch the ideas, and then they're having to sell it in. Like, they want to feel a part of it. They're hiring you, they want to have confidence in you, and they want to know that when you pitch it either to them or to someone they need to pitch it to, that they're a part of that process. And so we've started doing a lot more close working with our clients in particular. We call it co-creation, where we make them part of our creative process. So we're developing the creative brief together, side by side. We're maybe having brainstorm sessions with them. So rather than just the creative team and strategists going and doing brainstorm on what the concept's going to be, we invite the client into that process, right? To fill them out for what's resonating or what they think might work. Because the reality is, it's their business. They know the business better than anyone. We can leverage that to our advantage, right? So it's to our advantage to bring them in for multiple reasons. One, their expertise and their knowledge. Two, because if we include them in the process, they're going to buy into whatever we're going to be pitching to them a lot quicker and more easily and partner with us on selling up and selling through. So that's a big thing that we do a lot of now, is a lot of really, really close collaboration. Because let's face it, the creative process is what marketers yearn for, and it's what they love. And so they want to be a part of that process. Like, they don't want to just hire it out and let the creative team from an agency do all the fun stuff. They want to be part of the fun stuff. So that's something that we can leverage to our advantage.
Absolutely. And Mitch, you look like you're about to say something.
Well, I would say this is kind of going back to the 20 people in a row. Like, sometimes there is way too many cooks in the kitchen. What I've found when that happens is take more of an active listening role. Just listen, take note, find where's the through line to what everyone's saying. Even if people have terrible ideas, where are they coming from? Let's face it, not everyone has great creative ideas. Like, most of the time they're not good. But what is at the heart? What is at the core of what they're trying to get? So trying to client translate or just people translate, what is at the core of what they're trying to get at? And then to Aaron's point, I find that the same way with clients is, I think one of the biggest compliments I've ever gotten is like, Mitch and the team did such a great job of hearing us. And like, some people have used this term, not everyone, but like taking our bad ideas and making them good. And so, again, having that empathy, not just dismissing bad ideas, because I'll just repeat this. Some of the best ideas come from bad ideas, and any ideas add to the collective boiling pot, if you will, to come up with the great ideas. And so I think it's finding the pitch is one of my favorite things. I love being in a crowded room and just pinpointing, you know, different personality. Oh, that person loves dogs, so I'm gonna speak to them about their love of dogs and frame the pitch towards that. This person loves data. So, and it's not inauthentic. The message is consistent. I am being authentic to who I am. I have a hard time doing anything different. But how can you guide? How can you take what they're resonating with and bring it into the through line that you're trying to bring about? I think that is the biggest successes that we've had, is being able to walk that tightrope, varying different personalities and finding the commonalities. I think not to beat that horse, but it's just like, where is the commonality versus just going in and going, I disagree with this part. Okay, you might. Let's not focus on that. What do you agree with, so that then they feel a part of the conversation, and then fold it into what everyone's saying. And so it's all a collaborative position where everyone gets excited.
Well, and I think that is a really important thing to remember, is to take a second, and also that bad ideas can be really close to good ideas. And I think so often, you know, we hear something and think, well, that's not it. And so we just dismiss it, rather than saying, well, that seems weird. That seems like it's not it, but where was your brain? Right. Because it might just be half baked. You might just need to bring some other stuff into it.
Explore this further. Like what makes you say that, or what triggered that idea for you? Because what triggered that idea, even if it's not the idea, is what might trigger the big idea. That's the good one. So,
which can be challenging because especially in American working culture, we move fast. Like America is not a working culture to slow down or to create any kind of space for ideas. It's all about productivity, which I think is the wrong word, but that's a whole separate podcast rant. But it's all about, you know, let's go, let's move. We need to be in the office all the time. We need to see everyone doing the work. We need to, and it becomes where you're so focused on doing what absolutely has to be done every day. There's no time to really think things through or to do what could be done or what should be done. So being in advertising, you're not immune from that industry. We work with clients all over the country, working at all different paces, all kinds of things done. How do you approach that from a creative and strategic standpoint to be able to honor deadlines, to, you know, honor the culture as it is, but also create the space that's necessary to be able to slow down enough to think some of those ideas through?
Well, no client likes a long timeline, right? And the longest part of the timeline is the upfront discovery and strategy piece. So for us, I mean, we just set expectations up front. Like, this is our process. This is how long it's going to take. And this is why it's necessary. So that there are no surprises down the road. Like, this is just what it takes. Now, are there times we have to expedite things? Absolutely. And we do on occasion. And quite frankly, sometimes some of the best work we've done has been a result of a really, really fast deadline, right? And we've had to really just think and move very quickly on our toes. But we do recognize that strategy and the creative process, it takes time. You don't come up with great ideas, you know, just on a whim, especially ideas that are strategic, right? We just try to always keep that in mind. Once again, it's about setting expectations internally on what that looks like, and then setting those expectations with anybody we work with as well. Mitch, I welcome your input on that.
I would go back to a culture thing, because I think we've established a really amazing culture within our agency where not only is any and all opinions or ideas welcome from all departments, we want you to fail. We want you to tell us the bad ideas, get it out of the, because at the very least, you clog your brain, because sometimes the bad ideas are just stuck there. So then you can't move until you verbalize it. And I might be projecting because I'm a verbal processor, but just allowing people to tell bad ideas allows people this freedom and this luxury of like, then the free flowing ideas come so much more naturally. Then this fear-based culture of, I want to advance in my career. So if I say a bad idea, I'm gonna be seen as dumb, and therefore I'm not gonna be able to get to the next level. We have a culture of fuck that. You tell me the worst idea you have, and we'll find a way to make it a part of a good idea, or we'll bounce off of it. And it's just this. And I think Taryn's point earlier, sometimes our best ideas and best campaigns have been from condensed timelines. I think a part of that is people don't withhold bad ideas because it's like they don't have time or the luxury of withholding or thinking too much. It's just this like stream of consciousness, and we're able to connect those dots a lot quicker because we have no other way to do it.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's really important, is to create that psychological safety. And that's something where if you don't have that, if you don't have space for people to be able to de-stress, everyone's going to be in panic mode. And so you're just not able to think of good, world impactful, or even just decent ideas when you're in that stress mode, or where you're in that panic of there's so much to do, I don't even have time to think about what I'm going to eat for dinner. And so that psychological safety of creating a space to be able to have those conversations, to talk things through. I think while many businesses might see, you know, the water cooler, as they might call it, as something that is unproductive, I think that's actually one of the best ways to serve people in the companies, to be able to have those conversations, because it makes the work itself much more productive.
Couldn't agree more. And now I'm just noticing that poster in the back of you, Sarah. Failure is only failure if I stop. I think a part of that is in the brainstorming, like stop viewing failure as a complete failure. Like you might not win the battle, but let's win the war. So just keep going. I think it's grit and perseverance and passion that eventually win out, even over the best ideas. It's just, how can you keep moving forward?
Absolutely. So I want to be respectful of everyone's time. So I want to close out with a final question. And maybe this is the same for both of you. Maybe it's different, but would love to know, what is your favorite strategically collaborative What is your favorite strategically creative collaborative project? And what did you like about it? Kind of give us an example of what that collaboration looks like.
Mitch, do you want to go first?
Go ahead. Unless you want me to go first.
So I will talk about the one that, and of course, I was not hands-on in this one. I was not involved in this project outside of just oversight and watching it happen with the team. But I think that's what I love about it, is watching how the team came together. We recently did some private label branding for a group of C-stores. So this is about, you know, a 250 chain convenience store, a small footprint that's in the South, probably five states, and in more in rural areas. And they came to us, and their challenge was, we have a foundation that we support that helps community work, supports the community, and we really want to create a private brand of products that we can carry in our store that rivals some of these other bigger name brands, but provides that at a value and is the benefit of giving back to this nonprofit organization. And we want to create a brand around it. And they already kind of had an idea of, we want it to be a little bit edgy and sassy. We want to lean into our Southern roots and where we're located. But we want it to be a little bit irreverent. We want to push the line a little bit. So we had some creative freedom there that was really fun. And they were like, and we want you guys to come up with the name. We want you guys to come up with the look and the feel. We want you guys to design the packaging, the in-store POP, and all of that. So that was a project that we completed recently that really, where you took the insights and kind of collaboration or co-creation from the insights we got from the client, the strategy that we put in place, and the creative to create this beautiful line of private labeled snacks and bottled water that we're super proud of. And I think the thing that I'm most proud of is not that it's just beautiful and unique and great and what it has potential to do down the road, but the way that all the different, the strategist, the client, the account manager, the creative team all had to come together to essentially meet this challenge. And the outcome of it was something that was extremely rewarding for me to see as a leader of the organization.
Awesome. It is a really cool campaign. We'll have to see if we can share the link so people can check that out. Mitch, which one is your favorite?
I'm torn between two. I want to say either Haichu or Basis Technologies. I'll go with Basis. The reason being is it was a really fun one that the target audience was creatives, was creative agencies and, you know, brands and internal marketing agencies. So Basis Technologies is a programmatic platform, kind of how to deliver ads. So we needed to reach this audience that knows, you know, not only knows behind the curtain, but does it on a regular basis. Not only are they bombarded with 5,000 plus ads a day, typically they're the ones creating the ads. And so there's even a larger barrier to entry to get their attention, to convince them of an ad because they know so much.
Because we're marketing to marketers.
Exactly. Exactly. And so the way we accomplished that strategically was to create a self-aware campaign where we allowed them in on the joke. We made it kind of irreverent and poking fun at the ads in the industry, while also making it this bright, colorful, you know, 60s retro style that had an irreverent tone to it. So, you know, one of the ads was native advertising is native to us. And it had this, you know, lounge chair with legs and hands coming out of it, meaning it was a person inside of lounge chair next to a fire reading a book that said how to blend in. And the author was, you know, the CEO of Basis Technologies. Just these fun, irreverent kind of ads, get connected with connected TV. Or, you know, my favorite, I think, was the retargeting ad. So for those that don't know, a retargeting ad is you've been to the website, you've already like seen one of the previous ads, and then we're going to feed you with another ad because we're going to retarget you. So this retargeting ad was a guy with binoculars, super kind of creepy, looking right at camera saying, you just got retargeted. So being self-aware of, hey, we do retargeting really well, and that just happened to you. So utilize our technology. It's just one of my favorite campaigns. I think one, because it's on the demo, but also how strategic we were in like being able to break down those walls and market to marketers.
Awesome. Well, thank you both so much. I know we could talk all day about creative and strategy. And listeners, if you enjoyed this conversation, send them some nagging messages about starting their own podcast so that I have some extra extra help tapping them on the shoulder to make that happen. But thank you both so much. For anyone listening, would love to hear from you. Send us an email at embracetheish@gmail.com or hang out with us online at successfulish.com or Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn at embracetheish.
Success and failure, none of the opposite ends. Curveball hits, gotta know where to bend. The attitude will affect destination. And if you determine when you're gonna make it. Live between successes makes life rich. Living every moment, successful-ish. Live between successes makes life rich. Living every moment, successful-ish. Hey,
successful-ish. Another day, another task, think fast with a whole nother mission complete. I'm successful-ish. Pick up the weight, press on, and act on the visions I see. I'm successful-ish. Sit back and bask in the glory of all the goals I achieve. Successful-ish. Lose a stack, get it back, reinvest, hope with, then I roll up my sleeve. I'm successful-ish. Another day, another task, think fast with a whole nother mission complete. Successful-ish. Pick up the weight, press on, and act on the visions I see. I'm successful-ish. Sit back and bask in the glory of all the goals I achieve. Successful-ish. Lose a stack, get it back, reinvest, hope with, then I roll up my sleeve.
Hey. All this weight on my arms, need both flex. In this race, put behind, need more steps. Had to swear the learning curve, hope I don't crash. Hit your nerves when reserves got low cash. When I fail, realize that it won't last. You made it through in the past, just look back. Successful-ish, you can see how it contrasts. Failures and wins, use the past and I bounce back.
You can never win if you never go and do it. Failure is a hard road, rarely ever cruising. Embracing all my wins with a handful of losing. Expect the drought season when the plan's going fluent. I can never really fail, it's all how you view it. It's all a lesson, just depends how you use it. Gather all the data and keep it all exclusive. Never ending journey and the growth is therapeutic. My identity is not in what you see, I am the better me. Mistakes others make, I see. Have been teaching me. Compare yourself to others is an insult to tragedy. We were made unique, gotta use a gift collectively. Broke down my goals and a few look toesome. Can't take them back cause you already spoke them. Easily regressive, you don't stay focused. Focus, live between success and emotion.
Successful. Another day, another task, think fast with a whole nother mission complete. I'm successful-ish. Pick up the weight, press on, and act on the visions I see. I'm successful-ish. Sit back and bask in the glory of all the goals I achieve.
Successful-ish.
Lose a stack, get it back, reinvest, hope with, then I roll up my sleeve.
I'm successful-ish.
Another day, another task, think fast with a whole nother mission complete.
Successful-ish.
Pick up the weight, press on, and act on the visions I see.
I'm successful-ish.
Sit back and bask in the glory of all the goals I achieve.
Successful-ish.
Lose a stack, get it back, reinvest, hope with, then I roll up my sleeve.